Otano Public Health Chat with your host Fiona, and today I'm excited to have a guest from Nigeria and also someone who I overlapped a little bit in the work that I was doing when I started out in Rwanda in the same office. So I'm excited to host Dr. Nkechi Olalere, and I'm going to ask that she introduces herself briefly and tells us a little bit about herself and her background.
Great. Thank you very much, Fiona. My name is Dr. Nkechi Olalere. It's difficult these days to put a name to what I am. I mean, I started out life as a medical doctor, and then sort of stumbled into health financing in the private sector, and then did that for quite a bit before I then came into the development sector. So I'm a public health physician. But then I'm also a health financing specialist. And currently, in my role, I support the Minister of Health and Sanitation in Sierra Leone as a special advisor on health economics.
Thank you so much. It's amazing. Thank you for the intro and thank you for taking some time to share with us today. Yeah, so I liked a couple of things that you brought up in your intro already. You mentioned public health physician, you mentioned health financing, and it sounds like in your current role and work, right, you're in, it sounds like an advisor role, is that what you said, to a minister of health. So already so many things to unpack that I'm excited to hear how you got there and kind of like what, how your career has moved in that way. But maybe before we do like the present, can you talk a little bit about how your career started? Let's start with the public health physician part. So did you always know, for example, that you wanted to study medicine and become a doctor? And then, like you said, you mentioned stumbling into health financing or the private sector. So maybe walk us through your first, you know, your first one or two points in your career and like the career decisions and choices that led you there.
So thanks. Yeah, those are great questions. And as you were asking, I was just smiling. Did I always know I was going to be a medical doctor? I absolutely did. I come from a family of physicians. My dad was a medical doctor. He's late now. My mother is a medical doctor. My elder brother is a medical doctor. It was sort of like already written in the stars that I was going to be a medical doctor. And I did know I was going to do this, but I always just knew or felt that I wanted to do it differently. You know, no disrespect to the clinicians, we do need them, more of them every day. But I just felt that, you know, I was called to do something different with medicine. And I really didn't know what that was. So I continued along this path, the conventional clinical medicine, right? And it was until after I got married and had my first two children, and just going away on calls, right? You know, where you spend. So this was like a weekend call. I was away the whole weekend at the hospital. And then coming back home and just seeing things, you know, my home wasn't kept the way that I wanted it to be. And then I decided that maybe I wanted to take a break from clinical medicine. You know, my second child was really so young. And so I decided that I wanted to probably take a break from clinical medicine for at least a year, just so that, you know, she's a little older and then I can go back to clinical medicine. So this was just a thought in my head. I didn't really know, you know, I mean, I'm a medical doctor. What else do I know about medicine, right? So if I say I wanted to take a break, does that mean be a housewife? What did that really mean? But it was interesting because it was just a series of coincidences, right, that just took me on this other journey where I finally ended up. So as I was thinking this, I got this very weird, I mean, you can definitely, you know, consider it weird in a sense, because I didn't apply to this organization. It was a health maintenance organization. You know, they do health insurance in Nigeria, and they reached out to me and they said, hey, would you like come work with us? You know, we have an interview slated. We need some medical doctors and all of that. And I was very curious. How did you get my resume? And so they said you had applied to this hospital, and we had reached out to the hospital to say to them, hey, do you have any resumes, you know, of some people, you know, who maybe at this time you're not really interested in hiring or anything. Can you give those CVs to us, you know, and let's see what we can do with them. And that's how it happened. And so I went for the interview. I think that there were just two key things that stuck out for me. Number one, it was regular office hours, 8 to five. And then there was no weekend work. That sounded like music to my ears. And that was exactly what I was looking for at that time. And so I decided I was going to take it and go back to clinical medicine after 1 year. I never went back to clinical medicine. And that was how I started my career in health financing. And that role gave me sort of like, the thing I had been looking for, and I didn't really know what it was, that do medicine different. Because I sort of found that this gave me the opportunity to still practice medicine. We had this company clinics where I would go and consult, but then it also provided an opportunity for me to, do some administrative work, build my administrative skills, my managerial skills. And because I was then doing a lot of those, I then decided to go get an MBA, which was something like very weird at that time. I was, of course, the only, literally like almost the non-banking student in my MBA class. And then after that, decided to do my master's in public health. So that's how I sort of stumbled into health financing and then, grew in leadership in private health insurance. I became the CEO of a brand new health insurance firm. And then after that, became the chief operating officer for Nigeria's largest health insurance firm. And it was at this point that I then caught the bug for global health and then decided to go into the development sector. So it's a very interesting story. Oh, and something that I also missed out on saying that in between all of this, there was something I've always been very passionate about, which is another aspect of public health, right? Like health promotion, wellness. I always just felt that all the TV shows I ever saw spoke medicalese, right? It was all these big, fancy medical words, right? That I felt that people didn't really engage with. And I kept asking myself, how can you break this down into very little bits, right? How can you break this down into information that people wanted to engage with? And that sort of took me into a journey into media. I had this TV show on cable television. There was one that was just the 5 minutes health tips, on quick things, like maybe five quick things, how to reduce your blood pressure, and then also a 30-minute show. So it has been a very interesting career pathway for me. But the thing that I always say to people is, you think it, you do it, right? You want to die empty. You want to just really be able to live out all the passions, all the strengths that you have. I'll stop here.
Oh my God, that is so amazing. I wish you could see me right now. I'm smiling ear to ear because I did not know that you had this media like side hustle basically on health promotion. That is amazing. And I love
Absolutely.
that because it just brings out like being multifaceted, right? In career pursuits and kind of just going with, almost not a hunch, but yeah, kind of like going where you feel led to go. Oh my gosh, it's like a tidbit that just like changed my day. And good to know that like you can do so many things, right? Regardless of like your initial degree or initial training. But before I dig deep into some of the things you said, I just wanted to hear, so firstly, I guess in general, how long have you been doing this? Like generally, how long have you from like let's say from your medical career all the way to the work you're doing now, how many years has it been? And then I'm curious to know specifically how long you were in the private sector insurance space in Nigeria.
So from, I mean, so how long have I been working, right? From the point that I graduated, that has been, I mean, I really, I sort of tried to sort of say that my real work started 2004. So that's 19 years. But is it really from when I graduated? That's literally like 25 years, because that was 1999, right? So that's 25 years. So of these years, so from 2004 to 2017, so that's about 13 years. I was in the private health insurance space in Nigeria. And then, so from 2017 till date, which is about 6 years, that's how long I've been doing global health. But yeah, in terms of numbers.
No, that's amazing. It's just wow. It's so, yeah, it sounds like, there's the overall journey and then just like it sounds like different chapters within the journey where you're different, doing different things.
That's the thing, right? Like, even in terms of like just breaking it down in terms of, oh, this number of years here, this number of years here. But it just builds on the other, right? Like one thing builds on the other. I wouldn't have like it literally, like even if I had to then really have to do it all over again, I wouldn't have the story any different. I feel that my private sector experience really set me up for my journey in global health, because there's so much that, in the public sector, in the development sector, that is still like oh yeah, this will be great to have. But these are things that we have done and dusted and moved beyond, in a sense, in the private sector. Like, it's almost like, what variation of this are we doing now? And yet it's almost like, oh, this is great. This is something that we should really do in the public sector. So that experience, having been there, done that, you have a practical experience of that, really helped, right, to move the policy conversations in the public sector along in a pragmatic way, right? This is not just, oh, it would be nice to do. It's a theoretical thing that we are thinking. It's really, this is how to get your hands dirty, right? If you want to do this. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine with the, yeah, I am definitely guilty as like someone who's, I mean, pretty early on in my career, but I think I'm coming from a very public health development perspective. And yeah, I do, I feel like in many conversations, I have to be reminded there's some contexts where, yeah, it's not only the public sector, right? I think many times, like with the type of stakeholders, at least in my work, we deal with a lot of MOH, but like you, I remember you mentioning in one of the conversations, like when you were still like working around, like there's private sector, I think, especially in a country like Nigeria, right? And I just wanted to hear from you on that. I feel like Nigeria has a large private sector in the way their health system is set up. For our audience, I think maybe speaking more, like you mentioned earlier, around how there are so many, like, we don't want to be too technical, but I would love to hear from you a brief summary of like when you say you work in health, you worked in health insurance and in the private sector, what did that look like or what did that entail? You also mentioned a little bit about like consulting in the community clinics. Yeah. So maybe give us a sense to people who might say, oh, I have a health economics background or I have an econ background or an MBA, and maybe this is something I want to do. What would that look like?
So, I mean, in health insurance, there are so many different aspects of it, right? I had, like I told you, how I sort of stumbled into it. I had this amazing experience, right? Just starting with one of the foundational health insurance firms in Nigeria. And I was recruited then as a quality assurance executive, right? I'm a medical doctor. And so a quality assurance executive was really supposed to, was like auditing the hospitals, right? Understand, figuring out that they met the right quality for people to be registered or enrolled with those specific hospitals. It was also receiving their bills and vetting. And in those early days, it was very manual. So it was literally like going through every line item of the bill that they sent in as a medical doctor, trying to understand whether the diagnosis, whether the treatment they were giving made sense for the diagnosis, right? And then, speaking to essentially how much would be paid to these hospitals based on that. So that's sort of like how I started out. But with time, that role then grew. I mean, within the organization where I started out, that role grew, not necessarily because there were promotions or anything, but because I was really very interested in understanding how this whole thing worked. And so what we were doing then fed into underwriting, right? Underwriting, let's call it actuarial evaluation, data analysis. It was trying to understand for each of the different companies that we were managing at that time, what was driving utilization for them. So there are some companies that you would see that don't attend, staff from those hospitals don't attend the hospitals too often. And there were those others who would attend very often. So you wanted to understand what were the drivers of utilization in different areas. So just really understand, looking at the data, trending the data, trying to understand what the data was saying. And so, was it malaria? Was it high blood pressure? And, with that kind of information, what can you do? Because at the end of the day, if the utilization is high, your medical cost is high, your payout is going to be very high. In the private sector, it's about profit, so you're not going to make more, much money, right? And so the whole idea was, how can we figure out how to keep the medical costs low, but really still keep the patient healthy. And so the conversation was always about understanding those drivers. If it's high blood pressure, can we go do some health promotion classes with them, you know, help them out, tell them about high blood pressure, tell them about those, you know, the risk factors, help them to live healthier lives, introduce wellness clubs to them, get them to register. This was one of the things I really did a lot in all the different organizations that I worked in the private sector. It was really the whole focus on setting up wellness clubs to support all the people who had chronic diseases, because if they were getting the care that they needed, it was also about predictive medicine, about making sure then that we could predict that with all of this wellness that we were doing, we could for the future potentially reduce our medical costs by so and so. So it was always a delicate balance, right? Looking at the medical cost, dealing with the medicine of it, but then also using the data from that to then predict what this meant for profitability, for patients' wellness, for the future of the company. So it was, these were the major balancing skills, right, that needed to be done. For a health economist, there's a lot that can be done in private health insurance. It's really about, especially, you know, the cost benefit analysis. If you decide, oh, I'm going to introduce this additional benefits, you want to understand how much it should be priced, right? If we're going to look at the premium, what does that mean for the premium? In terms of utilization, what does that mean, right? So there are all kinds of, you know, benefit incident analysis, cost benefit analysis, cost effectiveness analysis that a health economist or an economist, right, is well suited to be able to support a health insurance firm with. But in a nutshell, those were sort of like my day jobs. And of course, as you move up in leadership, it becomes a whole lot more than that, right? It's also people management, it's also client relationship management, and then board relationship management. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So it sounds like you worked with data a lot at that time. Mentioned a lot of data analysis, which would have been a slightly different data set, right, from where you had started off with the clinical work. But maybe before we move on from this particular experience, I have two questions. One is on, I guess, in that work, what was your favorite in private sector insurance? What was the favorite part of your work? And then if you have any comments. This is just for my general curiosity because I worked in health work for something, and you know, universal health coverage is kind of like a thing, right? And something where you're working towards, or at least that's being talked about. So would love to hear from you as someone with a private sector insurance, where UHC kind of came in into the work you've done, or where you think it does or it should come in, and kind of like your thoughts on that.
So the first thing, what part of private sector do I miss? I mean, that is so easy to answer. And I'll answer it almost like from the frustration I felt when I came into global health, right? And there was so much in terms of all the impact of the work. You kind of see it at a higher level, which was great. But I felt so frustrated that this national agency, like national organizations, ministries of health, you know, health insurance schemes for the countries were literally flying blind. The kind of data that I had at my fingertips, like I could literally on my phone, if anybody has been authorized a treatment for up to a specific level, let's say 1 million naira, I get an alert on my phone that an approval has been given for this sort of money. Because it's almost like, you know, having an alert for specific large amounts of money, things that need to be, okay, let's really quickly make sure that something is happening. So there were all kinds of data I had at my fingertips on a daily basis. I knew how much, as a health insurance firm, we were due to pay out at the end of the month. Like, on a daily basis, I knew that at the end of today, our guarantee of payment ended the day at, let's say 15 million or 20 million naira. I had that data. And then I got into the public sector, and it was difficult to even just be able to review data from 6 months back, just to give them a sense of what your cost drivers are, to give them a sense of what your utilization pattern is, to give them a sense of your highest drivers in terms of disease diagnosis, so that you kind of know where you're focusing on, the hospitals, the like where there are strange trends or anything. None of that data existed. So that was one of the first things that I worked with my team on, when I got to Rwanda, just so that there's that visibility. So that was my biggest frustration. And of course, that became the focus of the first part of my work. While I was in private sector, universal health coverage wasn't really a big conversation. And even now, sometimes I see people in the private sector, Nigeria, the private sector, and, they talk about universal health coverage, and they talk about universal coverage in terms of insurance. And when they say that, what they're really saying is, oh, everybody gets a health insurance plan, right? The government can't pay for it all, so you need to be able to get one for yourself. You can't expect the government, which is really very interesting. And sometimes I sit back and I reflect and I wonder, oh, I used to think like this. Because and again, this is my why every country that I go to work, I always have these very basic conversations, starting from what is everybody's understanding of universal health coverage, right? Because people understand it differently. The man, on the street kind of just thinks that it's free healthcare for everyone, right? I don't have anything. Maybe the man in the government thinks, in the Ministry of Health, maybe thinks this is health insurance, right? Social health insurance. This other guy thinks actually that's not. It's actually mutual, right? It's a community-based health insurance scheme. So people have different understanding of what universal health coverage is. But at the very heart of it, at the very heart of it, right? Universal health coverage just speaks to the fact that, I mean, first and foremost, it's aspirational. It's something that we all wake up every day as healthcare managers and say, this is where we want to go to, right? I don't want to say it's utopia. I don't want to say something that is not achievable, but it's definitely aspirational. We wake up every day and we're asking ourselves, with the limited resources that we have, how can we stretch it every day to cover more of the population, to cover more services, and to ensure that people are paying less and less out of their pockets to access care? So this can be through a health insurance scheme. Definitely not a great idea for it to be a contributory health insurance scheme, but a health insurance scheme definitely has its place. This can also be pooled, our tax funding, right? We were having a conversation earlier today, and I came to understand, and I didn't know this before, that Mozambique actually has a national health service that is totally tax funded. So it could be that. It could be there are so many different mechanisms, right, to ensure that we're moving towards covering more of the population, more services, reducing how much people have to pay out of hand. So without giving these things labels, just being completely agnostic of labels, this is what universal health coverage is. And this is what every healthcare manager should be asking themselves. With everything that I'm doing, with every service that I'm providing, how am I ensuring that we're utilizing very efficiently the funds that we have to increase access, increase population coverage, reduce out-of-pocket expenditure. In a nutshell, and of course, this for me is a bigger conversation than this. In a nutshell, for me, that's what this whole conversation is about. And I think that different people view it differently.
Yeah, no, I love your definition, and I love how you kind of simplified the way of thinking about it. But it's so interesting you mentioned that different people look at UHC and or hear UHC and think of it differently, because I think I remember being in school as a student and being very, thinking of UHC as, like you're saying, kind of how do we lower out-of-pocket costs for people as they receive their healthcare services. And then now working with different governments and ministries of health and coming across people who are like, how do we make this, from a government perspective or MOH perspective, like how do we lower costs so that we don't, how do we make it, like you mentioned, effectiveness and efficiencies for cost, right? So because like it has to be paid somehow. So how do we do that, and how do we do that, not necessarily equitably, but in a way that it's covered for more people. So yeah, it depends which way you're looking at it, but great to hear from a perspective of someone with some private sector experience and also now working in the public sector.
Just one quick thing, just to say that even though I have alluded to the fact that different people have different opinions on it, and it's great, right? Because it's always makes for great conversation every time you start the discussion on universal health coverage. WHO is also very clear, right? How you track progress on universal health coverage. And the first thing really is about financial protection, right? We want to make sure what the catastrophic health expenditure is, what the impoverishing health expenditure is, right? How much are people having to pay out of pocket? Are they being pushed into poverty? Are they being pushed even further into poverty? That's one. And then the other one is all of those specific system trackers, right? So it's about specific areas service coverage that I track. So these are the ways that, I mean, at least according to the WHO framework, that's how you track universal health coverage. So at the end of the day, there is really an empirical background of what exactly is that you track when you're having these conversations. But again, in actual practice, in real life, it's going to be something that all healthcare managers, all fund managers are looking at as the holy grail every day as they make those decisions about what to buy, who to buy from, how to pay, right? And how to measure what success looks like. So just to put that in context, that even though we can have different opinions, there is an empirical
Right.
understanding of what exactly is tracked. Yeah.
Right. And we need to measure that as well to be able to know that it's actually happening and by how much. Which goes back to your first comment on like what you miss or your favorite parts of like the work and access to data. It sounds like in the private sector. Yeah, and that's I don't know. It's interesting because you're coming from a health systems financing, and you know, with a clinical background, and it goes back to the data for you. I feel like we've had different guests. I think we've had one person with an economics background in the previous season. But yeah, this issue of data in the public sector, data in public health, and not just access, but because to access data is to assume that it's there, right? But it sounds like in the public sector, at least we're lagging behind, or we're now trying to catch up on how we measure, how we collect the data, or even to think about what kind of data we should be collecting, and then how, and then how do you access it? And for me, I think that for me, that's a challenge that I find exciting. And it's good to hear that, okay, so maybe we can learn from the private sector. We can see how they do it, and then try to implement it in the public sector in that way.
I mean, there's no real copy paste, right? The way that it's done in the private sector, like you can't just ideally just adopt everything, right? And just put it in there. So I'll give you an example. So the GFF has a results advisory group. A subgroup of that results advisory group speaks to rapid cycle monitoring. Rapid cycle monitoring is really about the real-time use of data for decision making. I chair that subgroup, right? Now, as part of that role, I then facilitate the data module for the country leadership program, the GFF program. And so I remember when I was sharing one of my, so in one of my, the modules I was facilitating on data, I was sharing with them the experience of how we had a challenge, right? We were trying to understand the problem and how we use data to understand the problem, right? And so I was saying to them, oh, so then we found out that, you know, the cost of medicines was the big issue. And we tried to ask ourselves, how can we reduce the cost of medicines? How can we bring in, you know, a pharmacy benefits manager who would then import directly from the manufacturers and bring it in at, you know, the price and everything. And the conversation was very interesting because, you know, everybody was fascinated by, oh my goodness, this is how you guys were able to start from this big problem. And you kind of kept narrowing it down with the information you had. But the key things that they kept bringing up were, you know, this is not completely something that you can translate into the public sector, right? Like, for instance, you could then decide, oh, the cost of medicine is a problem, right? Oh, then let's go deal directly with the manufacturers. Like in the public sector, you would have to think about, oh, the Pharmaceutical Society of Nigeria, you know, the whatever, so that people don't think that they have been bypassed. You can't just focus on this is efficiency and we need to work on that. So, and I hear all of those. The point I'm just trying to make is that with all of those concerns, you know, some of those concerns that they raised, there is nothing that is impossible in terms of automating processes in the public sector, in terms of using data to drive decision making. It's just that, as opposed to private sector, where you can just think it, get it done very quickly, there's just a lot of coordination and, you know, stakeholder management that has to happen in the public sector before you can deploy this. But can these things work in the public sector? Are they feasible? Do they make sense? Absolutely. But we just need to be mindful of the fact that there has to be a lot of stakeholder management, right? Because if not, and that's where work in the public sector is always very interesting, right? It's never just the technical right? It's never just, oh, this is a great idea, let's get it done. And people who are very largely only technical, this is where they kind of run into problems, because it's almost like, my goodness, it just makes sense why we need to do this. Why don't you see it? We need to always consider the political background, right? There's always a political economy, especially in things that relate to health financing, because ultimately it always speaks to maybe changing or tampering with, the flows of money, who gets what, who sees what, who, oversees what, right? And it's the same thing with data. So there's always the political economy part of it that we need to be mindful of as we push for reforms, whether in the use of data or health financing. Just a quick
Have a really good point there around in the public sector is the stakeholders, and it's the public aspect of it, right? You speak to government structures and all the relevant stakeholders, and you're when you say it with technical people, I'm definitely in that bucket of people who get so frustrated because I'm like, we presented this to you, 1 + 1 = 2, like there's no, this is the answer.
No, absolutely not. 1 + 1 is not always equal to, in the
Yeah,
public
or
sector.
maybe for some populations, but not for this population, or maybe not at this time, or maybe not in this way, for so many other reasons. But yeah, you're right. I love the very bold statement that you made, that it's not impossible. And even talking about universal health coverage is aspirational and not this like unattainable goal. I find those to be very strong statements that I believe in, but I think good to have said out loud, for the people working on this, so that I do sometimes feel like, especially with UHC, it does feel like not a lot of people are on the train, or at least people always feel like it's not going to happen, or it will take so much, and a lot of negativity around it. But thinking aspirational and something that's not, that's not impossible is helpful. Thank you for that. So before we move into kind of like your favorite things or your least favorite things about working in the field now, especially, the later end of your career path, I wanted to touch on something that I was actually thinking about this with this season and the set of questions that I have and the guests we've had before, especially tying to like the goal of this podcast, which is to get young people, especially young Africans, to just hear about the field and about, choosing careers and their thought process. And you naturally became the first person who has brought up work-life balance. And just like, yeah, so I know you already touched on it a little bit and how that it was a thought and then it kind of flowed into that career decision, or at least at that point, the option to move into the private sector. But I was curious how, like, I guess how much of that still influences your career choices, the opportunities that come across you. What would be your advice to young people, right, as they think about, like careers and like balancing it with other life things, be it like having children, like you mentioned, or I don't know, wanting to travel the world and different things, and kind of how to balance that at each point. Yeah.
So let me start by saying that you've gotta be very clear what you want from your career, right? And you may not have all the answers at any one point in time, but it's okay if you change your 5-year plan or your 10-year plan every so often, because the whole idea is that the more clarity you have, the more you can refine where you want to go. But it's always useful, like if you do that self-reflection often enough, to kind of say, this is where I'm headed to. Right. So I started off, to be honest, I don't know whether the way I've done it is like textbook, but I don't think anybody's life story is a textbook or this is how to do it, right? It's almost like making sure that you're flexible enough to pivot, right? Sometimes I kind of say, flow, how do you say it? Flow with the punches, right? Like you've got to figure out at every point in time you meet a curveball, right? What you're going to do about it. So for me, when I first started out, when I first said I was going to be a medical doctor, even though I kept saying I wanted to do it different and I didn't know what it was, I just found out that I was very interested in OBGYN, right? And but when I got married, this was a personal decision. I said to myself that OBGYN was going to take so much from me. And I didn't think that I wanted to be away from home that often with a young family to just to be able to do what needed to be done. So it was at that time that I then decided, oh, I think I'm going to do community health, right? That was public health. But in my school, then it was called community health. And so I sort of figured that that would kind of give me that thing that I felt I was looking for that I wasn't quite sure about. But even that kind of, I mean, the public health came later because I then decided, you know what? I also wanted to be working, right? So let me be working, then let me figure out, you know, how it works. So, but all of those decisions for me was always seen from the lens of how would it affect my young family. And even the career choice that I have taken at this time is also determined by that. 2017 marked for me a very interesting year. It was also the year that my daughter was getting into. She was in her penultimate year of high school. And you know, it was almost like a come to Jesus moment, right? Like I sat down and I said to myself, okay, my first daughter is about leaving high school. She's going into college. The other ones are rapidly going to just follow her after that, right? Am I doing the thing I had always wanted to do? Were there things I wanted to do before and I wasn't quite sure about it? And suddenly I reminded, you know, I was literally like reminded of how I always wanted to sort of do something in, you know, global health. I didn't know what that was. And that was why when I first went into the first global health agency that I worked with, it was literally like I was giving myself a year to figure out if I liked it. And then I would decide if I want to stay or not. But I took that decision then to, because I knew it was going to take a lot of travel for me, a lot of travel out of the country to do it, because I then felt that my kids were at a stage where it was literally us meeting up at airports to determine, okay, this is where we're all flying to, or that's where we're all flying to. So at the time that I started in global health, I still had about 2 years of all my children literally to leave high school. Was that 2 years or 3 years? 3 years actually for them to leave. So in those first 2 years, apart from the year of COVID, it was a lot of travel for me. Every month I was in Nigeria. And I was in Rwanda in the first instance. So every month I would have to travel to Nigeria. It was either for visiting day or to pick them up after school or to drop them off when they were going back to school. It was a lot. But personally, for me, again, it's always about determining what works for you. For me, family was very important and I needed to work everything around that. All my bosses, all my organizations that I worked with, they understood that. And now today, I sit back and I'm very excited about all of those decisions that I took that prioritize my children, because today I see them really growing up like very well adjusted. Right now they're young adults, so this is really about, oh mom, where are you now? In Sierra Leone? Okay, that's fine. So that's where we're flying to, right? But at that early time when they really needed the support structures, I was there for them. So it's really taking conscious decisions about the things that are important to you, and then being able to fit your career life, right? And make those decisions around those. This is not a recipe for everybody, right? For some people, family is probably not as, maybe some people don't want to have kids immediately. Maybe some people don't want to get married immediately. So, like, there's no right answer. It's really about you and your priorities. What do you see for yourself in the first 5 years, in the first 10 years? Work around that. But in spite of all of this, one thing I'm going to say to everyone is also learn to just find time for you. If there's any advice I can give to myself when I was much younger, it's, you know, slow down, Kichi, like, slow down, you know? So right now, when I hear people call themselves workaholics, I look at them, I smile, and I say, that's not like a, you know, a badge of honor. It's not. It's not. You just find time for you. Like, just slow down, smell the coffee, relax, and do you. That's also okay. Apple said.
Yeah, but I'm also like I agree with you on the workaholic part, but then it's like we see your amazing profiles and then we're like, we want to be at this time point to 10 years from now. So I need to work now. No, you're absolutely right that work culture is important, and I liked your advice on centering it around what are your priorities and what matters to you, and maybe what matters to you right now or for the next 3 years, and then kind of like recalibrating as you go. Because at least it sounds like for you that, you know, you it kind of like ebbed and flowed, and based on different things, it changed, right? Your availability or your flexibility for travel and for certain roles. It
Absolutely.
depended on where you were in life. That's great. And it's great that your children are all grown up and now you can meet them at airports. I think that's really great. I think that's always at least, especially as a young woman. I don't know if I still count as young, but I think it's definitely, I think there's a lot of fear and conversations about careers to even bring it up to start there. I think, and then I feel like depending again on, you know, who you ask and who you listen to sometimes, but like there is no life balance or you know,
No,
nuance at workplace doesn't matter, and it's good to just at least, like you say, there is no one answer, but at least hear from different people and their different experiences, and then you can kind of, you know, think about it and work from there. So very great to hear your perspective and how you approached it for yourself. Yeah. So now as we wrap up, I think we've heard things that you enjoyed. You talked about the data piece. You talked about even at the beginning of your career, you know, wanting to do medicine differently or looking for that thing that, you know, this thing that you were seeking for in, you know, from a medical career. So maybe now let's balance it out and hear maybe either challenges you faced maybe in your personal career or like challenges or maybe things that you would love to see different in the fields that you're working or in the kind of work that you do now or at any point. Yeah. Let's talk about challenges and yeah, redirecting the field.
So challenges. So sometimes I sort of say, why didn't I just choose to do this public health, global health, earlier, get into the development sector? I mean, that's a very rhetorical question because, of course, there's no
You know,
way.
you're
It was
here.
just the right time, to do it. Because there's no way I could do the level of travel that I started doing, right, with my kids so young. Like for me specifically, just given my priorities in life, it would never have worked. So when I got into it was the right thing. But what it meant is that I have spent like 13 years, right, building all of this great network in the private sector, none of which was really useful to me in the development sector, right? So it was literally like trying to build a network all over again. And I find that the global health stuff is not like it just wasn't that easy to sort of figure out what the right networks were, the groups, the affiliations, the things, the places, right? To sort of build your network, do all of that. And if there's anything that I keep saying to myself at some point, something that maybe really just encourage someone to do or do myself, is just to sort of, put together kind of that, what is that playbook, right? For someone who comes into the development sector. So for me, I felt that it took quite a while to sort of build the networks, which I had like 13 years of building in the private sector. I came into the development sector. So that for me was one challenge when I first got into the space. It was also, again, coming from the private sector, learning to temper my bold private sector ideas, to temper them with the reality of how it works in the public sector. Remember the comments that I made about multi-stakeholder engagement, right? Making sure, because you can't just think it and do it, right? Like you would do in the private sector. And a lot of people need to be aligned. So it was almost like honing my skills in aligning multiple stakeholders behind one common vision of what success looks like. It took a while to sort of temper the private sector, let's go get it done. No delays, no whatever, right? With that, and one of the core challenges with that really is the sometimes very slow pace of work in the public sector. Like sometimes you can just wake up today and they call and they say, we want it right now. And you're like, no, what, can we do it tomorrow? Right now is when we need it. And then you say, good, let's go. And then you pull together everything, you get everybody going, this, that's it. And all of a sudden, that thing that appeared to be such a big, huge, urgency is no longer an urgency, right? And everything kind of peters down. So sometimes it's almost like the fits and starts of work in the public sector, which of course is not because these great people who work in the public sector don't want to have change happen. Sometimes it's the politics of the stuff, right? Sometimes it's just natural, I don't know, should I say the ebbs and the flow within the public sector. So it's also just, about managing your own expectations of how work would go, and then also learning to work within those challenges and still be able to hopefully support, transformational change. I think these are some of the core challenges, I would say, specifically for me in the public sector
Yeah,
generally.
no, thank you for that. And it's just when you mentioned the networking one, I've been so thrown back because I'm like, what is my network?
Where is your
My network. You mentioned network and I'm just
yeah.
like, what am I part of a network?
Yeah.
So that's, I guess that's a challenge for you, but I think it's also, it might be a lesson for our audience, at least definitely for me, this idea. It sounds like you prioritized, at least in your private sector work, or you had a network. So maybe that's
Yeah.
number one. Know what
Yeah.
network is. Be part of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, if there's any another advice, it would be build those networks, build them early. Make sure that you feed those networks, right? Like, you're consistent in making those connections, managing them, and making sure that you're also useful to those networks, because it helps. Sometimes it's just things that you want to think through, talk through, but those networks. So I'm glad that at least you're even saying to yourself now, huh, that's true. Who is in my network? Do I even really have a network? It is so important. It is so critical that we know them, we nurture them, and we understand
No.
them.
Yeah, no, noted. And then you mentioned stakeholder management, and I guess for you it was more of like approach and maybe pace of work as well around like transitioning from private to public. But I completely agree with you on the piece around like sometimes the work, like in health, like I every time now I think I'm in a better place where every time I get to support a new country, I always ask myself, is this an election year? What's going on in that country? Because the number of times we've created a sector plan, we've had something signed off by a technical working group or whatever, and then, overnight there's a new whole team or
Priorities.
a new DG or a new director, and that's maybe what not their priority anymore. They're looking at this or that for several reasons beyond one person's control, and then you kind of have to change, or you either change pace. And I agree that that can be frustrating when you are focusing on one thing and you want to get it done. So something to keep in mind working in like the P in public, right? I think that's where that comes from. Yeah, I'm mindful of time, so I think maybe let's talk about you've I think you've already given us a lot of like pieces of advice as you've been going. But maybe what might be useful for this episode is if you could talk about skill set. We touched a little bit on the data. I guess it could be skills, but it could be different things. But what two, three things would you highlight as things that have been, instrumental for your, career growth and success? Like what, two, three skills or two, three approaches or mindsets that you would recommend to people either work looking to work in this space or just generally looking to grow in their careers.
The first thing is self-reflection. It's so important that we all take the time to reflect. Self-reflection is very important. Like, you've got to keep asking yourself, what am I doing that is working? But for you to do a self-reflection, first and foremost, I think let's start with the having a plan, right? You've got to have a plan. It doesn't have to be a fully well thought out plan. It doesn't even have to be like, oh, this is actually, but you've got to have a plan that speaks to today, Fiona Gambana. This is where I kind of see myself in 5 years, in 10 years. And you keep asking yourself, what do I need to do to get myself to that place? That plan, you can keep finessing it, keep, fine-tuning it every year on your birthday, every 31st December, every month if you have if you're able to. But you need to be able to have a plan that you're working on. That's your goal. That's your raison d'être. And then self-reflect. So you've got to keep asking yourself, what am I doing that is taking me closer to this plan? What am I not doing? Or what am I doing that is taking me farther away from it? And self-reflection means telling yourself the hard truth. One thing I find, that I honestly don't understand a lot of times is that some people don't have the capacity. A lot of people don't have the capacity for self-reflection. There's always the thought that everything that goes wrong is person X or person Y or situation X or situation Y. It's always outside of themselves. And I'm not saying that sometimes it's not things outside of yourself. But you see, the things outside of yourself, you have no control over. The only thing you can control are those ones that are within you. So you have to ask yourself, what am I doing? How am I contributing to this or, or not? And then the final thing that I would also say is wherever it's possible, find the right group. So this could be a network, a mentor, a peer, some like an accountability partner. It's great to always have those people that you can bounce off ideas or those people who can kind of help you see the big picture. So call it a network. It could also be a mentor. It could also just be, your peer, right? An accountability partner who holds you sort of like accountable. I think this would be my three top tips, right, for starting out a career and figuring out which way you want to go.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. So have a plan, right? A flexible plan, but a general direction or idea of where you want to go. And then self-reflect on that as much as frequently as you can. And then community or network, as you say, or people that can support you, that you can be with on this journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wise words. Yes. Around the self-reflection, I think that's very important as well, to just take, a stop and just kind of reroute as needed.
Yeah, cross correct in real time.
Right. Decision making, right? Influenced by where you are. That really is the process. Yeah, no, thank you so much. This has been so good. I've learned so much about the field of private sector and like what it looks like. I think, at least for me in an African country, what health insurance, entails. I didn't realize that there's so much access to data, like real time. And then now I want to definitely look into that and think about it and as it relates to my work. And also just exciting to hear, people with like multiple years of experience who are also women who are doing amazing thing. I think I'm definitely inspired, and I know for sure our audience will be inspired as well. So thank you so much for taking the time. This has been Utano Public Health Chats, and today I was talking to Dr. Nkechi Olalere from Nigeria.